Good evening. My name is Jan Grant. I'm the village philosopher as well as the registrar these days. That means that I plan some forums. Tonight we do have a forum at hand called Lutheran Unity, Is It Practical? Our forum format generally is one of discussion. We have some people here who have some comments to make, and then we'd like to have the rest of you comment as you see fit, or ask questions or bring up comments. With me tonight is Diane Kovac, who's from Portland, Oregon. She is a member of Gethsemane Lutheran Church, which is ALC. Mm-hmm. And it is a church that is, at this point in time, in working together with two other churches, developing a program for the three churches together. One of those churches is LCA, the other is AELC.
What does this difference mean for the non-Lutherans?
Okay. Thank you for... ALC stands for American Lutheran Church. LCA is the Lutheran Church in America. And AELC is the American Evangelical Lutheran Church.
Association of Evangelical Lutheran Churches.
I grew up in the Methodist Church. I don't know. I started working at Lutheran College.
Can't do it
two words. That's a good...
Yes, you can, more and less.
Just say we're more alike than we are different.
Oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
I think that's too easy.
Well, maybe before the evening's over, we'll get into some of that.
Okay.
No. No, you're not muscle.
For...
I think it'll sort of, some of this will develop, I think, as we talk.
If that question doesn't get answered before the evening is over, you ask us. We have an hour. Compline will be in here at 10, so we have just an hour. On my right is Olive Spanis, who is from Seattle, Washington. She is the coordinator of Lutheran Women's Caucus for the Puget Sound area. Lutheran Women's Caucus, she will tell you more about. She has also been on the national board of that group, amongst other things, but that is one of the things that brings her. Next to her is Reuben Spanis, who is a retired Missouri Synod pastor, has worked a good part of his working life as director an executive in social services. Right? And he has some experience with Lutheran Unity. I think our general focus tonight will lead on some of the practicalities of Lutheran Unity. The people that are here in the front have had some experiences and have some specifics that can tell us how we can go towards Lutheran Unity. It was first brought to my mind that this would be a good place for a forum like this because Holden is operated through the ALC, LCA, AELC, and the Missouri Synod. So all four synods are involved here. And we also have a board member with us. So if you have questions about that, Bill Dirks is here with us. So I will let whoever wants to start. Why don't you start, Olive?
Okay. Did you say I was Missouri Synod?
Right. These folks here are Missouri Synod.
But I am Missouri Synod, and I am committed to Missouri Synod, and this does not mean that I agree with everything that Missouri is doing. I think there is a need for some change, and one of the changes I would like to see is for to reclaim the mission affirmations from 1965, which really spoke, articulated the gospel directive. And I'd like to see it reclaim in this context also the mission to the whole church. Because one of those lines was, we deplore what would divide the church. And I think that's very important. Missouri at times moves towards unity, and there are efforts in that direction that are still going on at different levels. And one was the taking part in the Lutheran and Catholic dialogues, and I served on the steering committee representing our district in this area. Ruben's going to tell you about that, some of that later, aren't you, I think.
I wasn't intending to.
Now about the caucus, I would like to spend quite a bit of time talking about the caucus, and those of you that have met me here and there around, and if you give any signs that you're interested, I'll probably buttonhole you and talk for some time. But I don't think that's my role tonight, so you feel better, Janet, I'm not going to. But I usually take with me some material, and as long as I was coming to Holden, I thought I would bring some. And so I have some brochures, Good News for Modern Women and Men Too. And that's the brochure that explains the caucus. Here's the newsletter for the Puget Sound chapter. We have a number of those. There are parts in it that are very general, and even if you're not from Puget Sound, you're welcome to pick up one of those. A few copies of The Well Woman are a national publication. It comes out on a quarterly basis. And then there's a sheet for you to sign your name and address and zip if you would like to know more about the caucus or be in touch with us. One of the many good things about the Lutheran Women's Caucus is that it is inter-Lutheran. We work together, we worship together, we study together, and we share resources and experiences, and particularly the experiences working out the relationships and roles of women and men in the church, and support women who are moving into full partnership in the life and work of the church. And some of these are not well received when they are exercising their responsibility this way. And so we support one another. We laugh together and we cry together. We do all of this across synodical lines and even beyond synodical lines sometimes, because we do have some members that are not Lutheran. And this is a great joy for us to experience this oneness. We keep saying, boy, we've got it. Why can't the rest of the church have it? Because it's a beautiful thing. It's operating very well. The only times that we're concerned about what church you belong to is when we have our election comes along and we want to make sure that we have balanced representation on the board. And it's very important then that we know what banner you're under. Some of these names may ring a bell with you. These are the members of the national board. Gretchen Lepke is our president, and she's from the AELC. The vice president is Marilyn Preuss from the ALC. She's from Fargo. I am the secretary, the national secretary. Carolyn Becker from Missouri Synod is treasurer. Thelda Bertram, AELC, is one of the members at large. And the other members at large are Jean Bozeman from the LCA, from LSTC Chicago. Faith Burgess, the ALC, teaching at Germantown. It's Philadelphia, but Lutheran Theological Seminary. Gracia Grendel, the ALC, Luther College, and now St. Paul. Patrice Nordstrand, she's at St. Paul now too, but she has had a parish in California. She's LCA. Palmyra Peralta of the AELC, New York. So we do have a pretty good balance there. At the national level, we hold weekend convocations every other year, and we have been focusing on wholeness at each of these convocations. The third one is coming up April 30th through May 2nd of 1982 at Blair, Nebraska, and the theme of that is Whole People Empowered. At our 1978 convocation, the first one that we had, we adopted a resolution on unity, and that has been reaffirmed from time to time. At the convocations, too, we have tried to have leadership from all different kinds of churches and participants also. It's a real good mix.
Could you recite that resolution?
I don't have it with me. I'm sorry. I didn't know I would be asked to do this, so I just have what I was going to bring along to promote the caucus. But it was a positive resolution for unity. The chapters, then, we have a number of local chapters, and Janet was on the steering committee of the one that organized recently in Minnesota. And Mary
Carlson,
she's not here right now. I think she's working on the plays over there. But maybe there's somebody else here from a local chapter. There aren't too many of them. But at the local level, then, we experience more closely this wholeness, this unity across the denominational lines. I think that's almost enough, except to say that I personally am very distressed by the convention action of my church. And I'm not the only one. There are many others. And those of us who have experienced the joy of working together are going to continue to work together. And we know our Puget Sound chapter is planning to send a letter to our church publication, The Witness, expressing what we have experienced, the joy that we have experienced, and hoping and the hopes that others within our church body will be open to that same kind of experience.
You might want to say what happened at the...
Okay.
You might just want to say that about what the decision was, you know, towards...
All right. That's right, since some of you have not been... at least I hope you haven't been watching what Missouri's been doing. It was a decision to break fellowship with the American Lutheran Church. We have had a fellowship relationship with the American Lutheran Church since 1969, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And the decision was to break the fellowship. We were moving closer and closer, and now it's back off. Okay, and that distresses me very much. And many of us are upset by that, but it doesn't speak for us.
Maybe I could pick up from there. Maybe it seems strange after that kind of an action convention that they ask a Missouri Synod pastor to speak on Lutheran unity, and is it practical? I think one of the things you have to recognize right off the bat is that Missouri Synod is a very disunified organization. It sounds very good when the resolutions come out, but the resolutions on the critical issues passed by bare majorities. And impartial surveys that have been done tend to show that the convention is not representative of the membership. Some impartial surveys, for example, showed that 60 to 65% of the members favored moving toward Lutheran unity. But the structure of the convention is very much the situation that we had in many of our state legislatures before the Supreme Court interfered, I'd say a good interference, and got to the one man, one vote kind of thing, which doesn't happen in church bodies, particularly in the Missouri Synod. So there is a strong control by small rural parishes, and the big city parishes do not get their share of votes. Well, that's aside. What I really wanted to say was this, though, that all this kind of posturing on the part of church bodies, declaring fellowship, seeking organizational unity, seems to me to be sort of beside the point. Unity is the work of the Holy Spirit. Unity is a gift of God. And church bodies may recognize whether they perceive or do not perceive that unity exists. But unity cannot be established by constitutions, bylaws, compacts, church resolutions. Unity is something that we discover. It's a gift of God. Let me take a broader example. Early in July, Olive and I were at the School of Ecumenical Studies in Ashland, Oregon. The faculty consisted of a pontifical scholar from Rome, one of the leading men of the Greek Orthodox Church from the continent, an Anglican. They studied and lectured on the Nicene Creed for a week. There was a great unity that was felt in that group at that school on the doctrine of God, the creation, the person of Jesus Christ, all the critical basic doctrines. There was unity there. Now, nobody is going to establish a resolution or a constitution or a compact saying, okay, you people are united. But the unity in the theological presentation was a gift of God. It was the work of the Holy Spirit. And I think we need to recognize this, that this kind of unity exists. Now, I want to talk on the practical side of it. My own guess is that the Missouri Synod drawing away from relations with other unions through its convention resolution this year is not going to make a great deal of difference. It's going to give the isolationists just one more peg to hang their hats on. The people who have already found joy in working together are going to keep on doing it. And I think the Northwest, like most saltwater areas, is way in advance of the Midwest and the older established areas. For example, and I say this not boastfully, just as a matter of history, I was the first executive director of what's now Lutheran Social Services of Washington, 1944. The first Lutheran agency in the United States, social service agency, that included practically every Lutheran body. The only the Wisconsin Synod stayed out of it. But Missouri Synod and all the, there were nine church bodies at that point that were part of it, and it set the pace. We set the pace here in Washington. The next one was Colorado for the pan-Lutheran, Lutheran social service agencies around the country. In what they call Region 13 of Lutheran Council USA, we have a whole batch of inter-Lutheran commissions where we're working together. Just again, by a chance and not to be boastful, I happen to be chairman of two of them. One is the Inter-Lutheran Commission on Social Services, where we review the work of our social service agencies, try to determine their church support, try to coordinate their work so that the Lutherans will continue to work together, not just in the statewide agencies like Lutheran Social Services and Lutheran Family Service of Oregon, but in all the Lutheran social services that are given under official church auspices. We have a new committee, a Lutheran, this is a doozer, the Inter-Lutheran Committee on Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs, which means that as chairman, I have the peculiar privilege of being viewed as the ecumenical officer of the Lutheran bodies in distinction with the Roman Catholic ecumenical officers or the Anglicans and the rest of them. Now, this is unusual. There isn't another place in the United States where we are pursuing our ecumenical endeavors in this kind of a joint effort. In the Lutheran Catholic dialogue of the last 18 months, particularly in the Seattle Puget Sound area, we had a very fine working relationship among the Lutherans and with the Roman Catholic Archdiocese, and particularly Archbishop Hunthausen, who has made himself a little bit famous by his very fine, I think, stand on a nuclear war. So what I'm saying is that the question for tonight was, is it practical? It's working. We're finding many ways of working together. And we are experiencing unity. And again, I come back to this, that what happens between the individual Christian, you and I, when we discover ourselves with a common faith, whether we're ALC or AELC or Presbyterian or Methodist or Catholic, there is a unity which God has given us. And no church decision or decision of ecclesiastical authorities can take that unity away from us. That's a gift of God. When two congregations find that they have a great deal in common and they work together, that's a gift of God's Holy Spirit. And, you know, the furthest reach you can get is out to the denomination. The denomination is a peculiar accident of the growth of Christianity that has no biblical basis. And when that then tries to make decisions for the individual Christian who has been called and who lives by conscience, or for the congregation, which is God's creation, it gets to me, to my mind, just a little bit irrelevant. We need the denominations to work together, but I am very happy that no one has yet altered the constitution of my own Missouri Synod, which says that the Synod cannot decide matters of conscience. And a matter of conscience to me is who I can worship and who I can recognize as a fellow Christian. So I'm just throwing this out. When we're talking about unity, sure, we're going to need the machinery for Lutheran unity. But let's not put that in the foreground. The thing in the foreground is God's gift working through His Holy Spirit, helping us find the kind of unity which we find here at Holden every evening in our conversations and which we find in our daily lives. That's the unity I'm looking for.
Marva.
Could I just tag on to the end of that? Because I was chairman of one of the other commissions, the campus commission, for 3 years, and the same thing applied there too. When we gathered together around a specific function where we're all working on something, and in the campus commission we had members from each of the synods who were board members. I represented Missouri Synod, and then we had all the campus pastors from Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Alaska, and Montana. And there was just such a wonderful unity between campus pastors of Missouri Synod and the NLCM, which is ALC and LCA, and those of us that were board members from the different synod. And it was really a joy to chair that, because it was so neat all the time to see us working together. And we talk about issues on campus and how we work together with the Methodists and the other people who were in campus ministry. And there was such a nice recognition that, you know, it's not us against another denomination, but all of us trying to bring the gospel to this campus. And so we need to be working together on that. I happened to be on a concert tour around the world when Missouri Synod voted for fellowship. And we had been experiencing in all the Oriental countries especially how essential unity is. You just can't, and in India too, you just can't isolate yourself when you're a Christian. When we were in Thailand, there were no Lutheran pastors. If we were going to have communion, we need to get a pastor from someplace else. So when fellowship got voted in, the choir just went crazy. We sang about two steps sharp that night because we were so excited. Unity had passed in the Missouri Synod. It's really tragic that, you know, after we've seen this functionally in so many other countries, and I've seen it functionally in campus ministry, it's really a shame that Missouri takes a step like that.
I think I'd just like to tag on to what Marva says. It's one of the great inconsistencies that in many foreign nations, Lutherans are just one. We've experienced that in some of our travels around the world. And then you get to this country, and they can't work together in the same way. You know, it's a crazy inconsistency. But again, it talks about that unity is the work of God and the Holy Spirit, and not really the work of commissions and church bodies.
I'd like to give Diane a chance to talk to us about that unity in her church and how some of the nitty-gritties of how it's happening there.
Well, about last fall, I'm on the church council, and last fall my pastor came to me and said, "You weren't at the meeting last month. Here's a book. You're supposed to read this." And it was called Lutheran Unity. And I said, "Oh." Yeah. And I said, "What?" Because I'm always getting books to read or something to do, so I thought, it's just one more thing to read. And so I didn't do it. I didn't read it. And the next month at council meeting, they were talking about it. And it was my fault that I didn't read it, because I didn't understand what they were talking about. And afterwards, I went to the pastor and kind of redeemed myself, or tried to redeem myself, and said, "What do they mean when they say Lutheran unity?" And he said, "Well, it's the different synods communicating with each other." And I said, "But aren't we already doing that? Because in Gethsemane, Gethsemane, Pilgrim, and St. Timothy, as was said, they're all three different synods. We always have gotten along. I've been a member of Gethsemane for 5 years. We've always done picnics. We've always done things together. So now I guess we've just got a formal name. We are being, you know, we are participating in a Lutheran unity. We have location. We're 5 miles about within each other. Our pastors like each other. They get along with each other. And we have people who communicate together and do activities together without wearing t-shirts that say, remember, I'm AELC, I'm LCA, and I am ALC. So those kind of boundaries, I anyway never thought about it. So we formed a committee. We said, well, let's start talking. So each pastor, three pastors, got people from each church, and we started, I didn't even go to the first meeting. We started meeting in, I think, June of this year. Prior to that, to get our congregation educated, we had forums, temple talks, and Sunday school classes, which were labeled Lutheran Unity, to kind of get people talking about it, aware of it. So then we have this committee. The committee said, okay, let's look at programs that we can become more involved with each other. So Gethsemane just finished Bethel Bible. We decided that Pastor Hunter's going to check with the Bethel people to find out if it's all right if he in January starts teaching Bethel to people from St. Tim's and Pilgrim that are interested in participating, as well as people from Gethsemane that want to participate in St. Timothy's. They have a program too, a fellowship program. In fact, it's called Koinonia Groups. People that want to get going on that. But also adult Sunday school classes, the idea of we could go to St. Timothy to take a class, or they could come to our church to take a Sunday school class, because we're not, like I said, we're not that far apart from each other. The second week in October, we're having a potluck to where one course will be served at separate churches, and then at St. Timothy we'll have a program and some type of discussion about what we've just did, physically going to someone else's church and having a good time. So that's going to happen, I think it's the second week in October. Also, we broke up the year, which kind of showed our commitment to it. We broke up the year into 4 months to where each church would be responsible to gather news from the other two churches and produce a newsletter, to where things that were going on at St. Timothy would be made aware to things that were going on in my church, so that people would know what was happening in the community. Also, we just finished a singles ministry task force. Out of three churches, they came up with a list of 200 people that were single. And they sent out a questionnaire and got some results from that. So this is kind of what we are. We're just, like I say, we have picnics, we have social, we have things together to where we get to know. Even 2 years ago, I came to Holden Village with a group from St. Timothy, because my church wasn't having a group and I wanted to come. And I went, and now I feel like St. Timothy is my second church, because I know about 20 or 25 people there. Plus I know both of their pastors very well. So it kind of gets people looking at each other, talking to each other. In October is Reformation, right? Reformation, yeah, I always forget. We're going to have a joint service together at probably at Gethsemane, because our building is the biggest of the three, to have a worship service together at our church. And as far as the task force goes, I kind of asked at the last meeting, what is our commitment to this? What is our, are we going to just continue meeting once a month, and pretty soon my responsibility on the church council is going to be off. And they kind of said, we ran out of time at the meeting, so next month they're going to talk about, do we send out letters of call to people? Is it going to be on a year basis? And the people that are doing the newsletter this time said, it better be a year, because I want everybody to have to do this. So that was kind of funny. But, you know, these are just some ideas of how many of us have Lutheran churches in our within a five-mile radius of each other that don't know the people, the pastors don't communicate, and I don't know, is our situation unique? At first I kind of thought yes, because I came from an LCA church where it was real cold, and I no longer go there. Just because the church was, they have a beautiful building, a beautiful facility, but that's another story. But anyway, so we even came up with, last time, Don Meyer from St. Timothy said, I want to have a name that we can call our group, which that right there told me they were thinking of long term. So, I don't know, but we decided to have three circles intertwining together for kind of letterhead on our whatever we send out. So these are just some practical, I guess, applications as to how we've started communicating. And I'm kind of interested to get into some of your discussion of as what you see unity is. So.
I have a question that's coming in late. You're talking about three churches. What three churches?
ALC, a ELC, and LCA.
Which?
ALC, okay, American Lutheran. ELC.
Oh, of the church you mentioned, Gethsemane, St. Timothy, and
Pilgrim. Which one is which?
St. Timothy is AELC. They were Missouri Synod. LCA, Lutheran Church in America, is Pilgrim. Mark Moeller Gunderson is the pastor there. And my church is Gethsemane Lutheran. Frank Brocker is the pastor, and if you'll be here in 2 weeks, you'll get to meet him because he's going to be here for a week.
Portland,
Oregon.
And you said that the one was a Lutheran, I mean, Missouri Lutheran. Explain.
Synod, Missouri Synod.
Okay, but what do you mean by that? It was Missouri Synod.
Well, I don't know how many of these people could probably speak to that more. A couple of years, I'm just going to let you take it.
Okay. Since 1969, there's been a considerable disagreement, open disagreement in Missouri Synod. And a number of congregations, I don't know how many, probably 150, 200, formed the new group known as the Association of Evangelical Lutheran Churches because of the rigidity of the administration of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And a good deal of this has been the rigidity of the administration and the election of a president who was very, very politically minded. Let's just be very honest about it. And these things are always cast in the form that these are doctrinal problems. Just as if you get into a political situation, it's always a matter of principle. In the church, the matter of principle becomes a doctrinal issue. In the secular society, it becomes a matter of principle. It's the same kind of thing that's happened. But as I say, I'd say about 150, 200. Bill, do you know the number?
200 is closer to it.
Yeah. Formed a new group.
What was the doctrinal problem, or can I ask that? Why did they do it?
So it might be a hornet's nest, but I would.
Okay. You want me to pick that up? I think a good deal of it is our two different views of how church bodies get together. Missouri Synod. Officially, and that's the current majority, which has about 55% of the voting power, says that there must be complete agreement in all articles of teaching. And that's a very tricky thing, because who defines what all the articles of teaching are and which ones you have to have complete agreement on? Mm-hmm. The other church bodies say that if you stay with the basic Lutheran principles of subscription to the so-called symbolical books, the Book of Concord, particularly the Augsburg Confession, that any church which recognizes the basic Lutheran teachings of the Augsburg Confession, Luther's Small Catechism, is to be viewed as Lutheran. And therefore, you don't ask further questions and try to split the points down further and further. And it's a matter of where you draw the line. Now, you get out of that, of course, you'll get all sorts of sub-issues like the ordination of women to the ministry, different approaches to teaching in the seminaries, etc., etc. But the basic problem is one tries to be exclusive and one tries to be inclusive. And it's the battle between how tight you draw the line between being inclusive and how, or when do you become exclusive.
And they're the most exclusive, is that it?
Yeah.
Not quite.
Oh yeah, there. Yeah,
you can go all
the way down the spectrum, and you can get the little, what they call the little Norwegian Synod, the Evangelical Lutheran Synod, which is even still more restrictive.
Oh.
You know, and finally, you know, you get to the old Quaker problem. You know, I think all the world is crazy except me and thee, and sometimes I have my doubts about thee. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, the problem when you try to get too exclusive, and that's the problem that those of us who call ourselves the loyal opposition in the Missouri Synod are trying to battle.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Is it my understanding that the ALC is kind of built to become defunct even?
The
ALC.
It was announced as a 2-year church body, and then they were trying to try to form a merger, but it looks as though it's lasting more than 2 years. But it's programmed to disappear, yes.
I was wondering, does the Missouri Synod are any women ordained in the Missouri Synod now?
No.
They're not. I didn't.
They're
what? They can't vote, did you say? Some churches they can.
That's right.
In some churches they cannot even vote.
I don't know of any that women can't vote yet.
I do. In our church, very interestingly, it was formed a number of years ago there in California. And the Constitution read that in matters of calling the pastor or other call workers, all communicant members would have a vote. So it's not only women, but it's also the brand new youngsters.
Yeah.
So it wasn't 21 or anything. In matters which have to do with bicycle racks and parking lots and stuff like that, where the men had to vote. Well, that was changed about 10 years ago, and women have to vote now, too. Matter of fact, with the exception of the office of elder and president and secretary, women can hold any of the board offices. Now, those are corporate officers in terms of the Constitution, and so the judgment was made at one time that those should be held for men. The old business about whether women should have authority over men.
What synod is that?
Missouri.
That's Missouri. There are some Missouri Synod congregations where women do serve as elders and where they are president of the congregation. So you see, it happens.
I think one of the important things there, and we've heard about it before, is that in Missouri Synod, we are a bunch of anarchists. Every congregation is responsible for their own governance. And the milieu out of which this came was an abuse by Bishop Steffen, who helped establish things down south of St. Louis, and there was an abuse of power. And C.F.W. Walther said, no more. We are a free association of congregations, and Synod will be advisory. And those of us who are, as was stated, loyal opposition, are hanging on to that thing tenaciously.
Autonomy is really a pretty important word in the Missouri Synod, at least used by some of us, who the congregation really may rule itself.
I don't think we want to concentrate on Missouri Synod's problems. Unless the folks
I'm getting a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. There are larger issues of unity than and how Missouri Synod can achieve unity with itself.
Hi there. Those here who see some problems with some of the kinds of things that Diane and others are talking about, and the unity issue.
I don't see any problem with this. In fact, what she said was something that we practiced when I lived in Pennsylvania. In fact, they even brought in some non-Lutherans, but the Missouri and the ALC and the ULCA at that time, LCA, excuse me, did this identical thing that she's talking about. And this was in the 60s already.
You said Pennsylvania?
Yes.
That's just so much more true on the coast than in the Midwest. My home is in the Midwest, and I was back there last week and was astonished again at how tight things are in the Midwest as opposed to out here and on the East Coast, where a lot more unity happens.
We had this unity. We had this exchange of services, different length, I mean, seasonal church activities, and the communication, the newsletter, all of this was already taking place in the 60s out there in Pittsburgh.
There are other communities. Call them church clusters.
Southeast clusters.
And there's been a lot of that going out here on the West Coast, especially.
May I ask a question? Are there as many different kinds of Presbyterians and Methodists as there are Lutherans?
Yes.
And Baptists.
More divisions?
Yeah. And Roman Catholics the same way.
There's that many differences?
Yeah, more.
I know there's some. I didn't know. You know, generally you hear Methodist, Presbyterian. Well, it's just, it kind of bothers the mind.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder what Jesus
what does he say about all this?
Exactly. Yeah. What does he think?
What does he think of this?
Not to mention the rest of the world.
And also, I'm on the Long Range Planning Committee for our church, and we've really been doing some neat things. We looked at how many of us drive by Lutheran churches or churches to go to our church. We thought about with the coming age of gas shortages, power shortages, just whatever, in the future they say, how many of us will look at the, I used to drive, I think it was it was quite a ways to the church I go to now from my mom's house. And I went right by, I think, three or four churches that I could have went to. It kind of opened our eyes to the coming age of apartment ministry, which we have apartments, and our growing community around us. What will we be like in 10 years? So that kind of brought into our discussion of unity, too. The increase of how many people next door to us, being that our three churches are within a 5-mile radius of each other, how many of us drive to, how many people that live next door to Gethsemane go to St. Timothy, and who is going to be our, who are we going to be ministering to in 10 years?
I have two questions. Why did she have to pass all those churches to go to one? And three, and the other question is, if there are three buildings that are so going to be so much alike, why have three buildings?
I have a further question right along with that. Is there another church that's closer to your house than any of those three?
Yes.
Why aren't you?
There's one 2 blocks away because I'm Lutheran.
Then why?
They're different. They're not Lutheran. And
no,
I've
why
been.
Did you go past that one?
A different spirit.
Yeah.
I mean, are you passing any Lutheran church?
Yeah.
And why are you passing that?
Because when I looked for another Lutheran church, it was a friend said, what you're looking for you might find in Gethsemane, and I did. And when I was desperately looking for a different church,
Gethsemane met, I just went there to a,
can you share what you were looking for? Love?
No.
Comfort?
Yeah, well, it was, the pastor at the church that I came from was a man that came out of his office, went up with the pulpit. After he had his sermon, he went right back to his office, shut the door. As a child, I was scared to death of the man. It was like he was God himself. And if he was God, I didn't want to be a part of it because he didn't, you know, he knew my name, he knew my family, but he didn't know me. And so I went to the new church. I went by myself to this church where they had, when I was in high school, they had a Bible study that met on a regular Monday night to where it was me. It was a neat group of people, all my age, and we had neat fellowship together on Monday night. And so I started going there, and then Gib Ross and left, and Frank Brocker came, and I liked his style of ministry. I liked his style. I liked the way he got people talking to each other, and we were the family of the feminine. From this morning listening to Marva's Bible study about family, we include, when we say the family of the feminine, I felt the family. In a nutshell is why I went there. I felt like family, and I was a single person all by myself, walking in the door every Sunday, going to church. I didn't have a mom and dad or a brother and sister or a family that all went to church. I went by myself, and I felt the family of the tenants. So that's the reason I came.
Then that just means that you were more interested in how it would be presented rather than what was presented.
Did I come
in on that? Yeah, I come from Chicago, the inner city of Chicago. 75 years ago, there were 27 Lutheran churches, Norwegian Lutheran churches, in a radius of 2 miles. Why? Because they all came from different communities in Norway. They brought their own pastoralism, so that brought the congregation over. And on every other corner, they established a Norwegian Lutheran church. They all spoke Norwegian, but they couldn't get together. They're still not together. So this is true among the Norwegians, it's true among the Germans, it's true among the Danes. It's kind of them all over again.
I don't think we need to think of that necessarily as bad.
No.
Because I think congregations develop a character. They develop a certain pattern, a certain lifestyle. You and I are all individuals. Each one of us has our own way of relating to people and probably relating to organizations and to churches. This is not bad that there are different churches with different characters, different patterns, and I'm sure that there are more people relating to church because of this. The thing that is bad is if they don't recognize their relationship with one another, and if they don't strive to work together where they can. But the fact of a variety just simply plays into the fact that we as people are individuals, and our family patterns are different, and sometimes one church suits us much better than another, not because it is teaching anything different or doing the Lord's work differently, but it suits our style. And that isn't bad in itself. The bad thing is if these people don't recognize one another as fellow believers and fellow workers in Christ.
But there is the element of stewardship. If several congregations plan and willingly work this all out and do it very carefully and come together. This was part of the ecumenical school where we were in Oregon a couple months ago, and one of the seminars centered around the mergers that could take place. And you stop and think, the cost of all these buildings, the cost of maintaining them and staffing them and all of that, where you could even keep your own staff to some extent and work it out, shared facilities. Mm-hmm. Just one building maybe, but work it out so that these different congregations could make use of it. You could have shared staff, you could really do a whole lot and free up all the other money for programs. You could have a ministry that would be much richer.
The smaller churches, we belong to a very small
church, a little neighborhood church, and have some new years, and we've had to do that. Anyway, we've joined with maybe four or five other churches dealing with refugees, Vietnamese refugees. We need one of us support the sponsor alone. We have some very wonderful experiences that haven't been forced into the
forced into the
you can be forced into
Would have much easier time to work out a shared facility type of thing. Yeah.
Are we talking about better Jews in these churches, or are we talking about uniting the three churches together, ALC, EALC, and the LCA, into one big body, or are we trying to get better unity? I can't go along with this, what was said here, that if you can't work together in the Jewish church. I'm from American Lutheran Church and all my life. My wife comes from the Story Center, however. And we traveled a lot, and we always begin to go to church when we travel. We've never even been refused communion yet. Is it right? Never even refused communion in the Story Center. So if this is bad, I said, to make it here. And I tell you, if you want better unity, let's make use of the Lacunza.
Good.
If you don't know what that means, let you explain it. What do you mean?
Lutheran Council?
Lutheran Council USA is a national coordinating council for the four different church bodies.
The Jewish Union belongs to them, the ALC belongs to them. Why don't we make use of that and just gradually get it? And let's not make the rift between our church and the Jewish Union church any worse. Let's quiet it down. And let's just try to work pray for it. Pray for the work.
Thank you, Pastor.
Yeah.
I'd like to underscore a little bit of what I think that the artist, and that is basically that we have a number of opportunities to deal with differences. We can reject them. And I think presently some of the administration within Missouri is in that state. We are rejecting differences. We can tolerate them and say, well, you know, you're a little naive, and I'll put up with that. Or we can accept and rejoice in our differences. Now, not that we all become the same, all cut out of the same cookie cutter. Just like you said, there are valid reasons for differences. Some of them are historical, some are ethnic, some are just science. But we need to do it.
Was it true?
Yes.
When you throw it all in one body, you could have one body and one group of chairmen and presidents. And when you have four different senates, you have four groups of councilmen and four chairmen. Who can get the most done and get it across to the public when it gets to one big church or four smaller ones? We have one church that has 740 million people and members in the world. They aren't going very good. I think that's one thing. Business isn't always good. It isn't always good business.
What was the, I have a question. What was the LDW Lutheran Book of Worship designed for? I'm asking that because I thought the idea of it was that so that we could go to any Lutheran church and be able to worship the same or be able to know what, like when I come here, we use the green hymnal. And so I can sing This Is the Feast without reading every word. I can sing it from my heart.
Well,
depends on whether you're using the first one, the second one, or the third one.
Words
are the same all the way through. I haven't determined that.
Marva, did you ask
this? Yeah, many of us in Missouri are upset about that too. Because Missouri was the one of the four things that urged that that would come about. Yeah. And then at the end, they're pulled out. And their book is about tomorrow.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's right. So you get to
don't be too sure
of
that.
They keep putting it off.
Put off the February.
The workshops are scheduled for this fall. We can use it. We can enjoy conversation.
But on the other side of the coin, we should mention that, at least out here, a goodly number of Missouri Synod congregations use this as a book of worship. Our congregation does, for example. I think it's between 15% and 20% has walked in, which is not bad when you consider that congregations don't buy new hymnals every year. They wait till their old hymnals wear out, you know, very often. And so, this illustrates the point that someone else made, that in the Missouri Synod, the congregation has a great deal of autonomy. And so if the congregations want to use this in Book of Worship, they use it.
I was wondering, I'm not sure, because even in a little church, it's not always unified.
That's right.
People are different. God made it that way. Working out problems is growth for all of us. But I wondered,
divisiveness in the different things. Divisiveness is part of our central human nature. That we would like to think of ourselves better as somebody else or having a little corner on the truth. And there is no other answer for divisiveness than, well, that's two things. One is it's basic human nature. The other thing is that we are imperfect in understanding. We're just like St. Paul. You know, he says, now we see through a glass darkly, you know. He says, I don't understand everything. And somehow we pretend that we should all understand it. But we should go back and look at St. Paul and remember that we aren't always going to understand the scriptures the same way. And that's part of the divisiveness. That every denomination has started because somebody has found something new he thought in the scriptures. And a word
was
really start something.
I was going to ask. Did this have a very sad effect on young people looking at older people making decisions? And I'm sure there would be bitterness that has been now when we've had our divisiveness. And I always thought one of the saddest fallouts in a Christian community is young people looking at older people becoming perhaps bitter or angry or the Christian attitude kind of gets pumped down sometimes while these things are under discussion, and young people looking at this do not see a body of Christ in action. I felt always that it was a very, very sad fallout that he doesn't know what to know.
We're nearing the
10
o'clock hour, so...
Can I make two comments on that?
Okay. One is, I think
what you're saying is true for young people who are particularly having a problem with church membership.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether to go to church or not to go to church or what church to go to.
Mm-hmm.
I think on the other hand, the other side of the coin is that if you look at the splits in denominations, very often it's the young person who is what you might call the sophomore in the denomination and knows everything, who is the most rigid. And that as they get older very often, they become much more tolerant. You know, young people can be both ways.